Okay, members, let's get the meeting of the Transportation Committee going. Call this to order, and I need a motion for the minutes to be approved. Somebody want to move the minutes? Representative Murray moves the minutes. Any additions, corrections? They look fine, Ron. Representative Schmansky, minutes look good.
Mr. Chair, I don't think we have a quorum yet that we can approve. Oh, we do have a quorum? Okay,
yeah.
I'm sorry.
Yes, we do. Yes, we do.
Yeah, they look fine with me, Mr. Chair.
Also, okay, thank you. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? All right, motion carried. Today we have the Duluth Airport Authority in front of us. Brian Reichs. I hope I pronounced that right.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's actually Ricks.
Okay.
I've been called worse, though.
I've been called worse.
Yes, you have.
Yeah, by that guy.
Well, welcome to the committee, and if you would state your name for the record and give us your presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Brian Ricks. I'm Executive Director of the Duluth Airport Authority. We operate both the Duluth International Airport and a small general aviation airport on Minnesota Point called Sky Harbor Airport. Thank you for the opportunity to give you an update today. What I'm going to cover, and I've included a package for all of you with kind of an outline of information that I'm going to go through today. I'm going to talk a little bit, give you some background on the Duluth Airport from a tenant and air service standpoint, and then move into a $65 million terminal project that we are in the midst of, about a third of the way through, and then touch a little bit on state and federal legislation. So if you're ready, I'll go ahead and kick it off. The front page of my report does show the drawing of what the new terminal in Duluth will look like. I want to first say thank you to the legislature for their support of that project. We'll talk more about the funding of that as I move forward. Moving on to the second page shows a depiction of our airfield. Our airfield sits on about 3,100 acres. We have a tremendous asset in our primary runway, over 10,000 feet long. It's the second longest runway in the state, next to the crosswind runway at Minneapolis-St. Paul International.
Excuse me, Mr. Reichs, the thing isn't working up there behind you.
I don't have it on.
Oh, you don't?
No,
okay.
It's just the information in
okay.
front of you
right.
there.
So okay, I'm sorry.
Apologize for that.
I apologize.
We have instrument approaches to all our runways, and we have available property for development. And then you can kind of see by the diagram, our terminal is on the southeast quadrant. The 148th Fighter Wing is up to the northeast. We have a former Northwest A320 maintenance base on the north side, some North Business Development Area on the north side, and then Cirrus Design, one of our major tenants on the south, along with Monaco Air Duluth, which is our fixed base operator. We run the airport like a business. We do not rely on any local taxpayer dollars to support either our operations or capital improvement costs, and so we're proud of that. There's not a lot of airports our size that can say that, so our key is bringing people through the door, whether it's airline passengers or aircraft landing and taking off, and I'll talk more about that. As I mentioned, we have the Minnesota Air Guard, 148th Fighter Wing, that has been in Duluth many years. They have 1,289 full and part-time employees in Duluth. They are no doubt the finest fighting unit in the country, as is evidenced by them winning what they call the Raytheon Trophy in 2009. It's given to the top flying unit in the Air Force. There's only been four guard units that have won it in their 50-year history, and these guys were the most recent winners of that. They did get their F-16s upgraded last year to what they call Block 50 aircraft. That's good for us because it preserves the mission for another, hopefully, at least 10 years, and they're also on the list for the future Joint Strike Fighter aircraft in Duluth, and our goal is to get that aircraft here to preserve that mission. That their mission is they do stand alert 24 hours a day, 365 days a year, and they have a tremendous, about a $90 million economic impact to our region. We are currently pursuing what we call active association. Active association is where guard units bring in active Air Force personnel to train those new personnel, and that's important because there's so much experience that these guard pilots and maintenance crews have at that base that we want to take advantage of that opportunity as well. Cirrus Design is also located on our airfield. They manufacture single-engine aircraft. It's the aircraft with the parachute. There's some information from 2007 on what Cirrus's impact was to not only the Twin Ports area, about $17.5 million in purchased products to manufacture those aircraft, but also about $41 million statewide. Now, obviously, the aircraft manufacturing and sales industry has been down over the last couple of years. I talked to Cirrus yesterday, and they said the good news is that there's no bad news today. So, but seriously, things have stabilized in their environment. They sold 270 aircraft last year, and they hope they can at least sell that many this year. If they can get to around 300 aircraft, they'll be profitable. Right now, they've got about 550 employees between Duluth and their Grand Forks location. The majority of those, over 450, in Duluth. The third slide, or the next slide, shows that Duluth is an international port of entry. We market very heavily what we call international tech stops. An international tech stop is an aircraft that is a large corporate aircraft that is coming from Europe and is destined to the West Coast. Those aircraft need a location to stop for fuel. They need a location to clear customs, and we've been able to market Duluth very successfully in that regard. We had over 300 of these aircraft drop in Duluth, clear customs, buy fuel, and move on their way, and over 500 international passengers, corporate passengers, were cleared in Duluth. So that is very productive. The following slide shows our nonstop destinations from Duluth. We currently have three airlines serving the market. Delta, serving Minneapolis and Detroit. We have United going to Chicago, and we have a low-cost carrier called Allegiant Air that flies nonstop to Las Vegas and Orlando. The following slide does show our airport service area, and what that means is where people are driving from to use air service out of Duluth. And everything that is colored on that graph shows you basically that people are coming from as far east as the Upper Peninsula, as far west as Bemidji, down south to Pine City, and those purple colors you see up in Canada means all those a lot of Canadians are driving and clearing customs at the border and driving down to Duluth and flying out on our carriers. So that, again, is good economic activity. The following slide shows our total passenger numbers. We had a good year comparatively to other airports in 2010. We were up 19% from 2009 and served over 306,000 scheduled airline passengers. In addition to that, we had over 5,000 charter passengers on airlines such as Sun Country and Extra Air. So good, very good year for us. I'll move now into our terminal replacement project, and I'll give some background on this. Some of you I have met with over the last couple of years on it, but we started this project back in 2003. And just to give you an idea, our terminal houses about 182 full and part-time jobs, so it is a significant job generator because of all the employees from the various tenants that work in that facility to support our air service and our international traffic and everything else that's going on there. We received our first grant to start design back in 2008. It was a $1.8 million grant from the FAA, and the Duluth Airport Authority funded the local share of that project. Why did we build this project? It's because the current building was built in the early 70s. It is non-compliant with FAA security. in Homeland Security concerns. It's non-compliant from an FAA standard situation, and our passenger volume has increased 75% since that building was constructed. You can see the pictures. We have a lot of congestion at check-in, that first picture. The building does not meet, in many cases, Americans with Disability Act standards, so we need to correct those. We see people having to drag bags up and down stairs all the time because we have one very small elevator that does not accommodate the demand. When folks go upstairs, we have typically in airports, you have one centralized screening location. In our case, because of the changes since 9/11, we have two screening locations located on opposite ends of the building. This drives up federal costs because it requires more TSA individuals to work there as screeners. And what happens is once those individuals are screened, they're forced into a very small hold room of about 100 to 120 passengers. There's no restrooms in those hold rooms. There's no concessions. That hurts our revenue stream. And the only way those people, once they're in those hold rooms, can use restrooms is have to go back out through security, grab their bags because you can't leave them in there with you, and then go back through the whole process again. In addition to that, there's many behind-the-scenes issues as far as inadequate passenger loading gates, forcing airlines to ground load at times, forcing passengers to walk across, in this case, icy and slippery ramps, which certainly is a liability issue. The tug tunnels are not wide enough to accommodate the existing service as well. And then finally, there's a slide that says aircraft tails penetrate FAA restricted airspace under existing conditions. When certain types of aircraft are parked at the building, you see a dotted line that goes up through that tail of that aircraft on the top portion of that graph. FAA airspace has become more restricted over the years, and that airspace is coming up off of our runway at a 7-to-1 ratio, and currently those aircraft are penetrating that airspace. So FAA wants this issue resolved, and that's, again, a big part of the reason we're constructing this new terminal. The bottom half of that picture shows what we're doing. We're basically pulling the terminal back to the south, and then we're pulling the apron back up to the building. Duluth is also one of the primary designated diversion airports to Minneapolis-St. Paul International. The reason for that is because we have a 10,000-foot long runway. We're fairly close to the Minneapolis hub, so if an aircraft is diverted, there's not as much fuel burn to get to Duluth as there may be in other alternative airports. And so this terminal, again, is needed so that when those aircraft come in, they can unload those passengers, sometimes 200 to 250 passenger aircraft, put them in a hold room that's large enough to accommodate them, and a hold room that has restrooms and concession space available for those passengers. Currently, if they dump passengers off those aircraft, they have to rescreen them because we just don't have the capacity to hold those passengers. From a budget standpoint, you see a pie graph on the following chart that shows it's a $64.9 million project. Of that, the building is about $42 million. The apron site and utilities about $26 million. We did receive state bonding money, $4.9 million in 2009 and $11.7 million last year to make up the $16.6 million, or the 26% bonding money share of this. You can see the other sources of funding. The main source, the primary source, is FAA discretionary money along with Duluth Airport Authority entitlement funds and bond backing from our passenger facility charges. There's also some state airports trust fund money in at $4.5 million. In 2009, we started with the first phase of the project, and you can see that picture there. We constructed everything that's in white. We had to move parking further south to make room for the new terminal identified in the blue block there. Again, about $9.6 million worth of work, 136 jobs. When we lobbied for the bonding money, we said we were ready to go, and we were. We got this project started right away after receiving the bonding agreement. Our project schedule moving forward is in the bar chart you see, titled Phase 2 Project Schedule. Currently, we are constructing the terminal building structure and enclosure. It's about $16 million worth of work. We have just advertised for bid on the bid package two, about another $17 million of work, which will be the terminal systems and interior. And then in 2012, we will come back and do the apron work where we pull the apron back back to the building. I have a series of pictures in there that kind of gives you an idea of the construction, where it's located. It is located just, again, exactly south of the existing terminal building that you see there. You can see all the new parking and the entrance road and the realignment that was accomplished back in 2009. And then a series of pictures kind of showing the progress of construction as we've moved along. We have constructed some passenger enclosures on either side of the site, because previously you'd walk right through what is currently the middle of the site to access our building. So we're trying to get folks out of the elements in Duluth to accommodate that traffic. And then you can see, as they've put steel up over the last couple of months, unfortunately, the weather has not been kind to us in Duluth this year. I think over the last 30 days, we've only had six productive working days. But these past few days have been very productive. And then the large picture shows what the site looked like just yesterday. You can start to see the curvature of the front portion of the roof there. So the project is moving along very nicely. In phase one, we had 14 contractors on the job. Phase two, currently 26 different contractors working on it, so a total of 40 contractors have been working. I'm pleased to tell you that 37 of the 40 are Minnesota contractors. The other three are from Superior, so we consider, obviously, Superior in the region as well. So, again, thank you for your support of the project. It's a good project. It's a tremendous economic generator. Our airport generates over $1.3 billion annually in economic impact, supports over 2,200 direct jobs, and about 4,400 multiplied effect jobs when you consider the full economic impact. One thing that airports are a little concerned about is the lack of federal Congress to pass a airport improvement program reauthorization, or AIP as we call it. The Airport Improvement Program is a trust fund that's built up of user fees, supported through user fees that are deposited into the Airway Trust Fund. No general fund revenues are used to support these airport projects. We then work through our Airport Capital Improvement Program to align ourselves for projects such as this terminal project to be funded through that program. We are currently on, I think, the 19th extension of that, short-term extension of that program. So it's been very difficult to plan long-term as we're trying to do projects like that, like this one. Fortunately, FAA has worked very well with us, and the money has continued to flow to support this program. But the Airport Improvement Program has been frozen at 2005 levels of $3.5 billion for some time now. There's also another provision in there, the passenger facility charges, that we've been seeking to have an increase in that, but it's unlikely that will happen this year as well. So we continue to lobby Congress to get a long-term bill passed so that we can appropriately plan for projects, obviously not only in Duluth, but all throughout the state at our state airports. We also have a state airports fund. It's supported by aviation users through state aviation fuel tax, aircraft registration fees, and airline flight property taxes. Currently, the construction funds available in 2011 for infrastructure development at our airports statewide is about $8.5 million. However, the airport construction needs is about $17.8 million. So MnDOT Aeronautics does a very good job of getting that money out the door, supporting high-priority projects, but there's always obviously greater need than funds available. The nice thing about our state airports fund, too, is it leverages, as is the case in the Duluth Terminal Project, it leverages federal funding in fairly significant amount. So it's a good program, and I'm here to ask that program remain whole. We did have that fund, I don't want to say raided, but money was taken out of that fund twice in previous years. But again, since it is a user-generated fund, our aviation users expect that those dollars go back in to support the airports that they're using. So with that, that's the extent of my presentation. I also wanted to mention it is Duluth Days, if you haven't noticed, and I want to welcome all of you to the reception at the Armory between 5 and 8 p.m. Tonight. We also always have a good turnout, and would appreciate if you're available to come on over and visit and learn more about Duluth. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Riches. Nice presentation. It's going to be a nice addition to the Duluth area. Representative Morrow has a question for you.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for the presentation, and congratulations on getting the project going. And I think I'll channel Representative Beard, who can't be with us today. He would also say, talk about the importance of the State Airport Fund. And I'm grateful to you for closing for that, because I know that Representative Beard in previous years has talked about how that fund has been either raided or used. And I believe that he's even brought legislation to try to restore that. So thank you for mentioning the importance of that fund. Thank you.
Representative Leidiger.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. I had one question. there's talk of the high-speed rail going on up to Duluth. I just was wondering about your comment on that. What kind of an impact would that have on that airport?
Chair Murdoch and Representative Leiter, thank you for that question that has been raised previously. We do not believe it would have much of an impact at all at our airport for a couple of reasons. I think the time it takes to get on that proposed train from Duluth to Minneapolis is I think it's 2 hours or maybe even 2.5 hours. The fare is in the 70 I think dollar range is what it was is proposed. What we've seen and is that typically business travelers that are destined, whether it would be beyond Minneapolis or to Chicago or whatever, do not like to drag bags on trains through multiple train stops to eventually get to another hub airport and then have to go through security, clear security, and then be on their way. So we don't feel it would have much of an impact at all for those reasons. Our goal in Duluth has been to attempt to get nonstop air service to as many of our top 10 O&D, origination and destination markets, as possible, and we've been pretty successful in the last couple of years of building on that service. In addition, I think leisure travelers, same thing. You have bags, you have you have children that you're carrying with, and to make multiple stops, have to switch trains, and then continue on and go through security, I think is tends to be somewhat cumbersome. I think, you know, my opinion is in markets where the traffic is so bad that has demographics to support it, it certainly can work. But in Duluth, we don't think it's going to have much of an impact at all on our air service for those reasons.
Thank you.
Okay, Representative Gauthier.
Thank you, Chairman. Representative Leidiger, the high-speed rail is definitely an alternative mode of transportation. As Duluth looks for economic development opportunities, and we know that transportation is key to that. Mr. Ricks, I'd like to thank you for your presentation and the outstanding job you're doing at the Duluth Airport Authority. So thank you very much, and we'll see you later tonight.
Okay, Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Ricks, I read recently that Allegiant is discontinuing that flight to Orlando, and how vulnerable are you to the continued volatility in the airline industry, particularly, you know, with airlines like that? And have you gotten any indication from Delta that they're going to be expanding anytime soon in your market? So two questions. How will Allegiant affect you? Is that company stable? And are you getting any signals from Delta and other airlines that they're going to come in?
Chairman Murdoch and Representative Hornstein, the One word I think you left out regarding the Allegiant is temporary suspension. It is just a temporary suspension. And I'll talk a little bit about Allegiant. Allegiant is a low-cost carrier. They serve, they're a niche carrier. And they've been the most profitable carrier over the last, two to three years. And the reason they're profitable is they go into small markets. They do not operate with 150-seat MD-80 aircraft. They do not operate every single day of the week. They operate on the peak travel times for the destinations that they are serving. One of the reasons Allegiant is so successful, however, is because they are not like a major network carrier that find it very difficult to make rapid changes. Allegiant changes very quickly. They can change, and they go into markets and they suspend service frequently at many of the markets they serve. So this was not a surprise to us. It's not unusual in their system. What Allegiant has told us is that by not serving Duluth in the low demand summer months to Orlando, our market will look even stronger. So while we're disappointed not to have the service all summer long, the service will be back in November. The other thing that they have indicated is that Duluth is a strong contender for Phoenix service, and so we're hoping to backfill the loss of those operations with the Phoenix service. We're hoping maybe as soon as this fall. So I don't believe it'll be much of an impact. Allegiant operates that way all the time. It did not surprise me as rising fuel costs go up. The other thing about our market as it pertains to Allegiant is we are in the top three of the furthest markets away from those Allegiant destinations. And when fuel prices start going up, we get concerned. I get very concerned because it means you've got to get more fare to offset those fuel prices. So that's in response to the Allegiant question. Delta has been serving the market well. When we received United service about a year ago, we certainly saw an increase in the Delta service from what we had previously. In a market our size, that's the key. We need competition in the market. We need competition to keep airfares competitive and to give our travelers as many options as possible. We work with Delta all the time. Delta's been a great carrier. They support this our terminal project because they know they need a better situation for their passengers. And we would hope to receive additional increases in frequency or destinations from Delta.
Okay, with that, no more questions for Mr. Riches. Thank you again for your presentation, and thanks for coming down.
Thank you.
Next on our list, we have the Department of Transportation, Dick Lambert. Good afternoon, Mr. Lambert. Welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chairman, it's a pleasure to be here. Members of the committee.
If you'd
me. I get over here where the... Can you hear me here?
We can hear you. Okay. Please state your name for the record, please.
My name is Dick Lambert. I work for the Department of Transportation. I'm the Ports and Waterways person for the Office of Freight and Commercial Vehicle Operations at DOT.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Today I wanted to give you a little overview of the waterway system that we are blessed with in Minnesota. We've got two areas, and I have to keep looking over my shoulder to make sure I've got the right slide on there. But I want to give you an overview of our waterway system. We've got we're blessed with the Great Lakes, and just hearing from Duluth, we're also going to be talking about Duluth and the Great Lake ports too. We've got a Great Lakes system and the Mississippi River system for moving our.
Pardon me.
Okay. Thank you. I'm not real smart on operating these fancy videos, so I have to have an assistant to help me. Peter, I appreciate it.
Well, Mr. Lambert, I'd have to have help, too.
Okay. With the Great Lakes system, we've got four ports up on Lake Superior. Duluth Superior is the largest port. In fact, the Duluth Superior is the largest port on the Great Lakes system, bar none. And we also have two harbors, Silver Bay and Taconite Harbor. And they either are shipping taconite or receiving coal or both on the Great Lakes for the benefit of Minnesota. The waterway system on the Great Lakes, as well as the river system, is what we consider the low-cost mode of freight transportation in Minnesota. It is the most fuel-efficient mode, and it emits the least amount of air pollutants per gallon of fuel used. That's how we measure it. And socially, it does not interact with passenger traffic, as does truck and rail on our land. So that's my little advertisement for the waterway industry. The Mississippi River system in Minnesota supplies Minneapolis, St. Paul, Red Wing, Winona, and also up on the Minnesota River as far as Savage. I'll bounce back and forth on these, and hopefully I won't confuse you, but on the Great Lakes with the four ports up there, this last year they moved 61 million tons of product. And as from a DOT standpoint, we look at it as 61 million tons that we won't have to move on our roadway system to deteriorate the roads on our state. The largest commodity that's moved on the Great Lakes, or at least out of Minnesota, is taconite. And last year, 2010, we moved 34 million tons of taconite from the Minnesota mines to the Ohio and Pennsylvania steel mills. That's the largest. Of the 61 million, that's the largest single commodity. We also move out of the Port of Duluth Superior about 20 million tons of coal that goes out to Detroit Edison and several other users of coal for their power plants. On the Mississippi River system this last year, we moved about 10.8 million tons of product into and out of the state of Minnesota via the waterway. And the largest commodity that we move south is grain. This last year we moved about 5 million tons of grain, and we often get asked, well, what does that look like? And I've often used the example of taking the Metrodome and please view the Metrodome with its roof intact, not imploded. That has about 60 million cubic feet of capacity in the Metrodome. With the grain that we moved out of Minnesota via the river this last year, you could fill that Metrodome about 2.5 times. That's to give you an idea of the quantity of grain that went out of here. On the Great Lakes, again, I've listed up there the main products besides taconite and coal that Minnesota receives up there: limestone, salt, cement, lumber. A lot of our salt that we use on our roadway system comes in via the Great Lakes for the northern part of the state. And also, as I mentioned, taconite is our big commodity going out of Minnesota, along with coal, and also third in that line is grain. This year, we had a big jump in wheat export out of Minnesota because of the problems that Russia was having with their wheat supply. They were running short. They had a drought. So when other countries have problems, sometimes the United States will benefit. Normally we hear about our problems and how other countries benefit from our problems. Okay. On the Mississippi River system coming into Minnesota, we import a lot of fertilizer for our agricultural interests, cement for all our building needs, salt, another big item that we use on our roadway system. One terminal in South St. Paul imports via the river about 350,000 to 400,000 tons of salt each year. Half of that is used in our roadway system. They also bring in steel and aggregates. Aggregates, most of the aggregates that come in are sand and gravel, and that's a more of a local issue from Grey Cloud Island, but the aggregate industries, they've got their own towboats, their own barges, and they bring them to their own terminals for distribution in St. Paul and in Minneapolis. Export, as I mentioned, grain is our big item at 5 million tons this past year. They also handle petroleum coke, which is a byproduct coming out of the petroleum refineries in Pine Bend, and that is used and blended with other coal for power sources. We export a lot of scrap iron. We've got ports in Minneapolis and St. Paul that process scrap metal, whether it's your old car that you're getting rid of or just a water softener, water heater, whatever it is that's made out of metal. They crush it up and haul it out of here on barges for the mills down south. And also potash is an agricultural product that's mined in Canada, railed down to Minnesota, and then we ship it out of here to destinations south via the river system. The river system, and this is just for information, I'm not pleading for money right here. I just wanted to tell you that the Mississippi River system and the Great Lakes, they're federal projects. They're not Minnesota projects. The U.S. government does all the handling of maintaining the river and the Great Lakes via the Corps of Engineers. The Corps of Engineers maintains a channel depth on the Great Lakes of 28 feet into the ports and throughout the Great Lakes system. And they do the dredging, and then they also have dredging disposal sites where they'll put the dredging and use it for beneficial use around the state. On the river system, the Corps of Engineers again maintains a minimum nine-foot deep channel from here all the way down to Baton Rouge, Louisiana, to make sure that we've got adequate river depth for the commercial traffic. That is done by the Corps of Engineers. They also maintain all the locks and dams on the river system and on the Great Lakes system. Little difference on the Great Lakes. We share the locks and dams on the Great Lakes with Canada, and we maintain several of them, and Canada maintains probably 12 out of the 16 locks on the Great Lakes system. But the U.S. Corps of Engineers maintains all our locks on the Mississippi River system from here all the way to St. Louis. The Coast Guard, the United States Coast Guard, maintains all the navigation aids up and down the river system and on the Great Lakes system. They also have the rules of the road that they enforce and inspect vessels. So it's a combination of federal agencies that maintain our system, both on the Great Lakes and the Mississippi River system. I'd like to talk a little bit about our Minnesota Port Development Assistant Program. That was started by you, the legislature, back in 1991 for the benefit of the infrastructure of the terminals for primarily the public ports. And our public ports, we have the Duluth Seaway Port Authority in Duluth. We also have the St. Paul Port Authority. We also have the Minneapolis. They don't have a port authority per se, but the city has several terminals that they're watching out for in Minneapolis. The Port Authority of Red Wing has terminals in their city, and the Port Authority of Winona also has facilities down there that they watch out for. Up on the Minnesota River, where we load a lot of our grain, we don't really have a port authority in charge up there. Most of the terminals up there are all private, so they generally do not partake in this port development program. The Port Development Assistance Program for Minnesota was funded in 1996, and to date, the legislature has appropriated about $21 million in funds for Minnesota, and I listed on there, it was Minnesota Statute Section 457A.01 to 06. That's the designation of it. We're not the first state to have a port development assistance program. In fact, there's about 30 other states that have a program similar to ours. In fact, ours we copied, or I hate to say copied, but we watched what the Wisconsin did with theirs. They've had one in force since the early 1980s. The Port Development Assistance Program provides grants primarily to public port authorities for improvements of their physical infrastructure. And that project, that includes roadway access to the port. It includes railroads that they have to maintain in their port area, the terminal upgrades, which would include their dock walls. We'll re-roof buildings. In fact, we even built a new warehouse for Duluth, because if we hadn't helped them build a warehouse, they might have lost a lot of their business to another state. So we were helping in those kind of projects. As I say, we've also, with this, we had about 33 projects that we've completed. And as the legislature gives the Port Development Assistance dollars, those are usually committed within 6 months. So we, the ports are usually almost shovel ready with their projects whenever the legislature decides to give them some money. We have what we call the Minnesota Ports Association, and they also have a lobbyist that works with the legislature that informs you, and I think he's probably already given you a list of projects to look at this year. I think the Ports Association has asked for $10 million from the legislature. Currently, we have a list of about $65 million worth of projects for the different ports that they need help on, like the examples that I just gave you. One of the Port Development Assistance Program provides about 80% of the project, or up to 80% of the construction of the project, which includes final engineering and the construction itself, nothing more. The ports have to put up at least 20% of the cost of the project. Many times they'll have putting up more, because they've got to get the project done, and they're getting all the help they can from the legislature, but we run out of money just about every year. These projects primarily, they increase the efficiency of the facility. They also upgrade it. We do a lot of things to upgrade for code, electrical code, plumbing code, fire prevention codes, that kind of stuff that maybe the port is not able to handle on their own when they want to get it when they want to get the job done. How are we doing here? What are we doing? Okay. 2009, the legislature gave us $3 million for port in appropriated funds, and the Port of Duluth, Port of Winona, St. Paul, and Red Wing currently all have projects going on. Excuse me, using those funds, and as I said, they still. I think the Ports Association gave you a list of about $41 million of projects needs in order to support their request for $10 million worth of funding. One of the latest projects that we've just accomplished with Port Development Assistance funding, I just wanted to mention, was the Port of Duluth. They're suffering from a corrosion issue that is eating away their sheet piling steel walls on the first 10 feet below the waterline. And that's a problem that everybody in the Port of Duluth Superior is having. The University of Minnesota, along with a lot of agencies, including the Corps of Engineers, have been studying this for years, and found out it's a copper bug that's eating into the steel. It's very and they're not sure where it came from. But anyway, in order to take care of it, they went over to Belgium and found people that understand this. Apparently, they've had some same problems with this corrosion issue, and they developed a process of coating steel, sheet steel, with a poly product. And this last year, the Port of Duluth took advantage of some federal ARRA funds, about $3 million worth of ARRA funds, and $1 million from our Port Development Fund, plus they picked up the balance, a little over another $1 million or so. It was about a $5 million project, and it was going to take them about a year and a half to do this, where they recoated the upper 10 feet of their dock walls below the waterline. And this just gives you a picture of the terminal near their unloading dock. They've got about 6,000 feet of terminal. They finished that before the snow this year. Fortunately, otherwise, they're going to take them until probably next June or July to finish it. But they finished this $5 million project in record time. And now their dock wall is protected from corrosion for at least the next 20 or 30 years. Some of the other terminals up there are having to do the same, but the Port Authority of Duluth was able to do their whole dock wall in one fell swoop. So that was the way they did it. The last is just my website. If there are any questions, I'll be glad to answer them. That's the extent of my presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Lambert. Members, any questions? Seeing none, thank you very much.
Okay, thank you, sir.
Okay, next we're going to have Corinne Zuers give us a presentation on revenue and expenditures.
Chair and members, I'm Corinne Zewers with House Fiscal Staff, and we decided to not do a PowerPoint today since there's one computer and one computer plug-in. So, I was asked to provide a brief overview of the transportation budget. And there are some handouts in your packet. The first looks like this, and what it is it's a brief overview of the revenue. A brief overview of the revenue streams that are going into the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund, and also then how the motor vehicle sales tax is distributed. So, as you can see, the first of the major revenues that goes into the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund is the gas tax, and that is about $823 million per year. The gas tax is currently at 27.5 cents per gallon. The second of the major revenues going into the Highway User Fund are tap fees. And tap fees are based on a formula. It is 1.25% times the depreciated value of a vehicle plus $10. And that generates about $532 million per fiscal year. And then the other major revenue source is the motor vehicle sales tax. And this is split between the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund, about $217 million. And then that is also, some of those funds also go towards transit, specifically Metro Transit of $142 million per year, and Greater Minnesota Transit around $21 million per year. Back to the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund, the total funds, the total revenues that go into that fund are about $1.6 billion per year. And most of those dollars are used for roads, specifically trunk highways, which are the highways and interstates of the state. And that's about $910 million per year. The county state aid highways receive about $503 million per year. And county state aid highways are the county roads that usually, they're the ones with the blue signs and that are low numbered. So usually county roads have either blue or white signs, and the county state aid highways are the ones with the blue signs. And then municipal state aid streets, which receive $132 million per year. The other transportation and public safety programs, the funding for that specifically, most of those funds go to the Department of Public Safety Driver and Vehicle Services, and that money covers the costs for collecting some taxes. And then the last area is the other state government programs and transfers. $19 million of that, we've discussed before, is the transfer made to the Natural Resources Funds from the gas tax. which is based on the amount of revenue. The formula is based on the amount of revenue generated from motorboat, ATVs, and off-road vehicle use. So with that basic overview of the revenues coming in, the next page in your packet gets into the direct appropriations. And there are two sheets that look very similar. The first one is the total direct appropriations for our budget, and then the second one specifically looks at the general fund. So starting out with the total direct appropriations sheet, the first one, the transportation budget is approximately $4.6 billion per year. And the agencies that this committee looks at, as we've been hearing from, are the Department of Transportation, the Met Council, the Department of Public Safety, and then we also have some contingency fund and tort claims accounts that's about $2 million per year that we typically appropriate for that. With the Department of Transportation, 64% of its budget is trunk highway funds, and 27% is from the county state aid highway fund. So about 91% of the funds that we appropriate are those two funding streams, and only 4% is general fund money. So so with that, just looking at the layout of the budget, the first tier is just the multimodal systems, local roads, state roads, and agency management. Those are our categories in which the items in which we appropriate roll up into those categories. We make appropriations at the level of transit, aviation support services, airport development and assistance, commuter passenger rail freight, at that level. And most of the money for multimodal systems specifically comes from either general fund appropriations or from appropriations from the state airports fund. There's a little bit of trunk highway fund money that flows through the freight area of the budget, and that's specifically for freight related to the trucks on the roads. Moving on to the local roads portion of the budget, the base budget for local roads is $1.4 billion per year, for the biennium. And local road funding comes through the County State Aid Highway Fund and Municipal State Aid Street Fund. There isn't any general fund money flowing through the local road portion of the budget. The next area is the state road area. That is $2.6 billion, and most of that funding, not all, but most of it is from the Trunk Highway Fund. There is a small portion $6,000 worth is from the general fund. So the rest of it, like I said, the majority of it is Trunk Highway Fund money. And the last area is the agency management at $119.5 million for department support and buildings. And that is also mostly trunk highway fund money. Moving on to the Met Council, the Met Council's budget is the base for the 12-13 biennium is $129.8 million for the biennium. And that is 100% of that is general fund money. And that is for both bus transit and rail operations. And as you can see, a majority of the Met Council budget is in the form of bus transit. The council uses the general fund money for specifically for metro mobility and bus operations. Moving on to the Department of Public Safety, the base budget for that department is $306.6 million for the biennium. And that budget includes admin and related services, driver and vehicle services, state patrol, and then traffic safety and pipeline safety. And the Department of Public Safety has a mix of funding. About 56% of it is trunk highway funds, and then 32% is special revenue funds. And the special revenue funding is is mainly through the Department of, or is based on fees that the Department of Public Safety collects, the driver's license fees, the title fees, because the Department of Public Safety is a fee-based organization for running those programs. Specifically with the administration and related services area of the budget, there are three areas that this committee appropriates money for usually. That's the Office of Communications, Public Safety Support, and Technical Support Services. And that portion of the budget is really a mix of general fund money, truck highway fund money, and then also funds through the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund. The second area is driver and vehicle services at $111.9 million. And that portion of the budget, as I said, they receive appropriations from the Special Revenue Fund and then also the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund. That's for their costs for collecting the taxes, as well as some trunk highway fund dollars. Moving on to the State Patrol, receives their base appropriation for the 12-13 biennium is $166.2 million, and a majority of that is in the patrolling highways area of the budget, and most of that is trunk highway fund dollars. Capital security at $6.2 million, that is a general fund appropriation, and then commercial vehicle enforcement is also trunk highway fund, and then vehicle crimes, that is a highway user fund appropriation. And then the last two areas, the traffic safety and pipeline safety, they are the traffic safety portion of the budget is trunk highway funds, and that is a match for federal funding. And then pipeline safety, the $2.7 million for the biennium is a special revenue fund appropriation through the fees that they collect. Moving on specifically to the general fund, which is the next flow chart in your packet. As you can see, the Transportation Committee's budget is only a small portion of it is from the Trunk Highway Fund, about 4%. And the general fund only makes up about 1% of MnDOT's budget, but it makes up 100% of the MAC Council's budget and about 5.2% of the Department of Public Safety's budget. So when we're looking at the general fund budget this session, the two main areas that this committee has funding in terms of the general fund is Greater Minnesota Transit and the Met Council, with some other small appropriations for commuter passenger rail, freight, buildings in the Department of Transportation agency management portion of the budget. And then on the public safety side, there's some in the Department of Public Safety's Office of Communications, public safety support, technical support services, and capital security, and then a couple of other areas. So that is the general fund budget. And then just the last piece in your packet is the spreadsheet that provides all of the details on the base budget, and I will be updating that with the governor's recommendations here in the next couple of days. And just to in terms of format for this spreadsheet, I thought it would be useful just to go over sort of one of the budget activities in terms of the layout. Under Aeronautics Aviation Support Services, the first two lines on there, the air and the trunk highway, those are the base appropriations for that budget activity. And then once we have the governor's change items, but once I enter them in, they'll be listed below that, and then the totals for that budget activity are below. So, and we have, currently I have the previous biennium on there in the base budget. I'll add the governor's and eventually the House and the Senate. So, with that, Mr. Chair. a brief overview.
A brief overview. Thank you very much, Ms. Zewers. Any members, any questions?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Ms. Zewers. Great presentation, as always. You know, the first day I had asked MnDOT about their funding of transit and roads, I think you answered that question. It's minimal. But, and I did a little back of the napkin, which I'm sure is probably not accurate. You have the information, but given all of the funds, dedicated, not dedicated, general funds, funds used for maintenance, funds used for operation, it seems to me overall, including the MnDOT and the Met Council and Greater Minnesota Transit, roughly 5% of our overall transportation budget is for transit. Does that sound accurate to you? And then the 95% would then be for local roads, county roads, et cetera. We're talking about everything together. You know, you said $4.6 billion MnDOT, $300 million Met Council, and we have a combination of some other funds here and there. Does that sound close to you in terms of the breakdown roads transit?
Mr. Chair and Representative Hornstein, I think that that question would probably take a little bit of work, and the reason why is because transit receives a large share of the motor vehicle sales tax funds, which are statutorily dedicated, so they won't actually show up in the direct appropriations that I was discussing. So I think in order to answer that question, we would have to look at the statutory appropriations for roads and for transit in order to actually get at that.
Okay. It would probably be helpful because I know there's been a lot of consternation among some about how much money transit gets. And my perspective on this is when you compare that to the overall big picture, it's a fraction. I know in the bill that we did in 2008, the large transportation bill, roughly 17% of that bill, you know, which had the dedicated sales tax, et cetera, for CTIP, you know, about that amount of the federal ARRA bill, if you compare roads and transit, less than 20% for transit. So just it would be really probably helpful to get that figure down the line here as we get into the budget discussion in the rest of this month and in March.
Mr. Chair and Representative Hornstein, I'll pull that and get that information to you.
Thank you.
Members, anything else for Ms. Zewers? Okay. Well, thank you very much. Okay, now we have the DOT overview of the governor's budget recommendations. I'm going to butcher this name here. Bernie? Arsenal. I ruined the first guy when he got up there, so anyway, please welcome to the committee, gentlemen, and please introduce yourselves for the record.
Mr. Chair, thank you. My name is Bernie Arsenal. I'm the Deputy Commissioner of the Minnesota Department of Transportation.
And I'm Tim Hinkle, Assistant Commissioner responsible for modal planning and program management for the department.
Hey, thank you very much.
Mr. Chair and members, thank you for the opportunity today to present to you an overview of the MnDOT budget. We're going to do this apparently over about three different meetings, and starting today we'll get as far as we can. I believe that we're also scheduled for February 28th, and then I think one more day after that. So what we're going to do is today I'm going to start out with a overview of MnDOT's budget and MnDOT's system and the state transportation system, and we're going to do a little bit of I think there will be a little bit of redundancy in terms of the budgeting and that, but we're going to show it in a little different way, so you know, there may be questions, but we'll work through those together, and some of it has to do with that statutory and direct appropriations and that, so the numbers will be a little different. But I think it aligns nicely with the presentation that Ms. Zewers just provided you. Then Tim is going to talk about modal planning and program management and some of the transit issues. And then we'll also have, if there's time today, we'll have Rick Jonas here to present to you the state aid system, both county and municipal. First off, I'd just like to highlight the change items that are part of the governor's budget. The first is that we're asking for an appropriations increase to utilize some federal funding that came to us through the elimination of some earmarks and the August redistribution that provided additional funds for us. Second area is that we're asking again for appropriation increase for our state planning and research dollars. Again, additional dollars came to us from the USDOT. The third is we have a separate bill going through trying to pursue a targeted group business program, and that's a one of the strategies that was identified through our DBE and Workforce Collaborative. We're asking through this change request for two positions to manage that program. The next is for relative to our ARMOR program, which is the Allied Radio Matrix for Emergency Response, and that request is to operate and maintain that system, which is an emergency response system that includes things like the 800 megahertz. And finally, the general fund reduction. Our general fund reduction reflects a 5% across the board general fund reduction. That's largely related to MODES, but other general fund dollars that we have. But the big number that comes out of that is to Greater Minnesota Transit, and we took a 8.3% reduction to that, which amounts to about $1.3 million. That is in alignment with the 8.3% reduction to Met Council for the Metro Transit. So here you see a little different number than we heard a moment ago, but our total budget for the 12-13 biennium is $5.1 billion. That does include the direct and statutory appropriations. A little bit about our workforce. Right now, MnDOT is in the neighborhood of about 4,975 employees. That is down almost 500 employees from about 10 years ago. These employees, along with all of MnDOT, manage the state transportation system, and I'd go over that with a little bit of an overview right now. There's 141, almost 142,000 miles of roadway in Minnesota. Of course, that includes trunk highway, city, county, and township roads. You note that there's about 57 billion annual vehicle miles traveled, and over half of those are on the trunk highway system. So it does work where the trunk highway system is the main kind of arteries throughout the state, and then we reach out to our other roadways and collectors and our arterials and so forth. We have 13,000 bridges in Minnesota. About 3,600 of those are on the trunk highway. And there's 135 public airports. These airports play a really important role in the communities around the state. And of course, there's 7 metropolitan area airports. We'll talk a little bit more about this later, but we manage the grant programs for the water freight, the rail freight, and transit in Greater Minnesota, as we talked about earlier. Also, we support and help with the bicycle and pedestrian facilities throughout the state. So our program structure at MnDOT is really broken into these different areas. Agency management, you can think of as corporate services for the department. There's our multimodal area or program. There is the local roads program, and both of those two things we're going to cover here in a moment. And there's also the state roads program, and that is our districts in dealing with the trunk highways across the state, designing and constructing projects, as well as operating the system through snow and ice and other maintenance activities that we work in. All right, this reflects our constitutionally dedicated dollars for highway purposes. This is a very Reader's Digest version of what you just heard, but it does show our highway user tax distribution fund. It shows the sources of that. I won't spend a lot of time on this, but it's a little different. It reflects the same material, just in a little different way than what we just heard a moment ago. So if there's any questions about that, we can go through that a little later as well, or now. So if we break this down into spending by program, We can see that about 52% of our dollars are spent on the state roads. Local roads get about 35%, and then the modes are about 10%. And that that reflects all modes, not just transit, based on the question we just heard from Representative Hornstein. And then that agency management is, again, the corporate services component. If we look at spending by category, you can see that local assistance is the lion's share of this, at about 42%. And then our capital program, which is our construction of trunk highways and bridges, about 29%. And compensation, of course, is salaries. And then our operating costs are also built into that. And then we've also got some debt service that we're responsible for. And then some other things like the trunk highway or transportation revolving loan fund. If we look at spending by fund then, we can see that the trunk highway fund is, again, about 54.1% of our spending. The county and the municipal state aid streets are a large portion of that. They sandwich our federal and federal stimulus funds. Now this is, we've got about $40 million that we're still spending of our ARRA dollars. That's just finishing up projects that have already begun under that program. The $653 million, that is. We've also got the special revenue. That includes things like restitution and some of our partnership agreements, and then transit assistance, state airports, general, and other things. If we look at spending by appropriation type, this gets us again to the $5.1 billion. The direct spending is about $4.1, which I think is similar to what we heard earlier. Adding in the statutory federal funds restitution dollars again. I'm sorry, the statutory appropriations is 970, and then some other things there that make up the 5.1 billion. There are budget challenges, of course, for MnDOT, as I think we all can recognize. One of the things that we've been dealing with over the past year or so is the early retirement incentive, and this was a program that the legislature adopted last year, providing this incentive of 24 months of health and dental insurance. We did offer that agency-wide at MnDOT. We had 415 people that applied and were approved and ultimately accepted the early retirement incentive. Of these, 53 of those positions will not be filled. We are able to do things through our lean process, looking at the way we do business and trying to identify more efficient ways of delivering the transportation system. We had improvements just in the way we do business. We've combined functions. We've reorganized some of our areas, and that's what's enabled us to reduce these jobs. In addition to that, we've asked each of our offices and districts to be able to manage through that incentive. And in some of the ways that they're doing that is by holding positions open and not filling them right away so that they can manage within their own office or district budgets those costs of that incentive and such. When we look at the agency as a whole, and this will change over the years because one of the ways we're saving dollars here is that we're bringing in younger employees that start a little lower on the pay scale, and that does help our budget. We're anticipating about a $10,000 per ERI participant initially, and that will phase out somewhat, but not completely. Other budget challenges are relative to our federal reauthorization. These are clearly uncertain times that we're in right now. Our most recent extension of the safety lieu goes through March 4th. It makes it very difficult for us, as these extensions are short in time frame, to do long-term planning and programming. And so to the extent that we can, we really hope for as long of a reauthorization as possible. We're expecting another short-term extension, but as soon as we can get that federal authorization through, it makes our life a lot easier to just be able to plan whatever the circumstances are of that bill. I'll talk a little bit about the programs now. Again, this is our agency management area. The services that are provided through agency management include the departmental leadership and management teams, the financial services, our budget office, communications, and reaching out to the public in terms of marketing and such, general administrative support, and our HR office, and then our IT office as well. If you look at the breakdown then of our agency services, you can see that compensation accounts for about two-thirds. About two-thirds of our this budget, and then other operating expenses consume the rest. Buildings are a big part of MnDOT. Might surprise you to know that there are over 1,000 buildings that MnDOT has to manage and maintain. Excuse me. These are buildings that we use for our snow and ice operations. Excuse me. This happened yesterday as well. And a little bit of a cold. We of course have our headquarter buildings. Some people don't think it's usual for me not to be able to talk. We have 8 districts around the state, including the metro area, and of course we have salt sheds and sub areas that have truck stations throughout the state. Here's a breakdown of the other buildings, and I'm just about to hand it off to Mr. Henkel. Mr. Henkel.
Might be a good time for a question here from sure. Representative Morrow.
I thought I'd come up with one for you, if that's okay, Mr. Arsenault, while you're getting a drink of water there. There was a question earlier, I think, about the number of employees that MnDOT has. I think you said the number went down over the last 10 years. I wonder if you might be able to break that down a little bit more narrowly for us. Say the last 4 or 5 years, has the number of employees at MnDOT gone down?
Mr. Chair and Mr. Representative Morrow, last 4 or 5 years, I think it stayed relatively consistent. There was a big reduction in the early 2000s, but we've been managing through that fairly well.
Follow up?
Yes, if I might. So, if I might understand, then the primary focus has been this early retirement incentive that you all have been using as a way to try to control employee costs. Do I understand that slide correctly?
Mr. Arsenault?
Mr. Chair and Representative Morrow, that is correct. We've really used the ERI as a way to seek out innovative ways of delivering the services that we provide. We've got some good examples of reorganizing some of our divisions, reorganizing some of our offices, and so we built all that into this initiative through the ERI, and we believe it's been very positive for the agency.
Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just to follow up on that, so that slide, 13, is that already part of your 6% reduction that was in the governor's budget reductions yesterday, or are you going to have to do that over and above this?
Mr. Chair and Representative Hausman, this is not part of the 5% reduction across that we had talked about earlier. This is above and beyond that, and we're working through these changes as an agency.
Okay, and one more from Representative Benson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and this is a follow-up to the follow-up. And, you know, there besides the governor's budget yesterday that will call for some agency reductions, there's a bill working its way through committee about a 15% reduction over a five-year period. And two questions. Are you experiencing the same level of attrition over the next 4 years? I think we had an average of just over 6%. And then aside from the both the bill and the governor's, what are you continuing to do to say, you know, if I look out 5 years, what is my agency going to look like, and is there additional reforms that can be made to actually reduce personnel and expenses?
Mr. Arsenal.
Mr. Chair and Representative Benson, I may have misunderstood Representative Hausman's earlier question. That 6% was the loss of employees, attrition. Is that what that was, or was that to the budget?
To the budget.
Oh, okay, then that was correct. So, to your point, Representative Benson, this we do anticipate that over the next 2 or 3 years we will have less retirements than we typically see. We usually see, and I'm not, it's somewhere in the neighborhood of 100 to 200 retirements a year at MnDOT, somewhere in that ballpark. So we've reached beyond that based on the incentive, and we're trying to work within that. But as is always the case at MnDOT, we're constantly looking for ways to streamline the way we deliver the transportation system through partnerships, through different ways of new technologies and things like that. So we're constantly looking for that, and we ask that our divisions all be accountable for that.
Follow up, Mr. Chair. Anything that you could bring back to the committee as concrete programs that you're working on for reductions, cost reductions?
Mr. Arsenal.
Mr. Chair and Representative Benson, we'd be glad to come back and talk with you about this.
Thank you. Mr. Henkel, your turn.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. I'll continue with MnDOT's overview with a quick briefing on the modal systems program area, which includes the budget activities of aeronautics and transit, freight, and passenger rail. For your benefit, I will refer often to your budget narratives, and I'll be starting on page 18 of that budget narrative if you'd like to refer to those pages as I go through this PowerPoint presentation. I will start with the narrative on page 18 and just make a quick reference to the program description and highlight the fact that the budget activities associated with the modal systems program are, in most cases, associated with support activities to those services or infrastructure activities that are owned by other entities that include local government as well as the private sector. These are not similar to what you might see on the trunk highway side of our business in the state road construction budget. These are often coordination activities with others. If you move to page 20 of your document, we'll start with the aeronautics budget activity. This activity is intended to enhance aviation safety and promote aviation across the state. As you see summarized here in the services that are provided, this area provides for aeronautics administration. That is typically the office activities that are involved in providing the support to the grant and aid programs across the state. We also have an air transportation operations responsibility. This is providing air transportation services through the planes that are owned by the state to the legislature, to state employees, as well as university personnel and constitutional officers in the state of Minnesota. This budget activity also supports airport system investment and planning, those planning activities and investment activities that occur across the state, as you can see long listed in that summary in your budget narrative. It also funds the aviation system management activities, which furnish the weather systems that are necessary, as well as the repair and maintenance activities across the state. Finally, on page 21 of your budget narrative, there's a description of the last activity, which is traveler information, and some of the activities that are involved in providing information to pilots, commercial airlines, etc., and weather information across the state. As you can see in the summary here, which is also included on page 23 of your budget narrative, you can see that the appropriations that are being recommended for fiscal years 12 and 13 respectively accumulate to a total of $194,280,000 divided into the direct and statutory appropriations for each of those. Those remain constant in both cases across the fiscal years that they are being recommended within the biennium. The next slide gives you a quick summary of the spending plan associated with that budget request. It's divided into local assistance on down the line. You can see that the lion's share of spending associated with this budget request is associated with the state and federal grant and aid programs that are administered to the local communities to improve their airport facilities and navigational aids and buildings that are necessary at those locations. The remainder of the budget request goes to some of the other operating expenses and compensation that's necessary to provide the oversight, planning, and maintenance and repair activities across the state. Moving quickly to the next budget activity, which is transit. This is on page 24 of your budget narrative. As you can see under the activity description, the transit activity provides transportation alternatives to driving alone and allows people to live independently and participate fully in Minnesota's communities and the economy. The goal remains, as it has been for a long time, to provide transit services throughout the state. As you've seen in some previous statistics, we currently do not provide transit services in all counties across this state, and the goal remains to provide that service in all areas of the state. Quickly moving to page 25 and the services provided listed on the PowerPoint summary as well, you can see that the services fall into four areas, including the transit system investment and planning. This is the core area providing the grant and aid to those eligible recipients for public transit services in greater Minnesota. And that is the planning as well as the technical assistance and the evaluation activities that go along with that. There's also a budget activity for transit operations and maintenance that provides for the potential for commuter bus projects and services. I don't believe that we have any of those needs in this current budget, but it is a summary item that can be in future budgets. Transit administration as well, providing the office management activities, administration support services, as we try to put forward the federal programs that are necessary with the state funds as the match for those federal programs, as well as the bicycle and pedestrian section activities, where we provide bicycle and pedestrian planning, administrative, programmatic services to the activities within the department serving to provide those modes within our trunk highway projects. If you move to page 27 of your budget narrative, you can see the appropriation recommendation for the transit activity, which is and totals for the biennium $297,674,000. And the PowerPoint slide before you gives you a quick summary of the small ramp up that we will see in this recommendation for statutory appropriations from 132.7 to 133.4 in that biennium.
Mr. Henkel, if I could interrupt here, Representative Morrow has a question.
You probably saw that coming, Mr. Henkel. But actually, it's not my question. I've been asked when we talk about the reduction to Greater Minnesota Transit, if the department knows what the effect would be on individual transit authorities, and I've been asked to ask about the Duluth Transit Authority specifically.
Mr. Chairman,
Mr. Henkel,
and Representative Morrow, I do have a slide that will get to that, but I'll just summarize what it says. It says, we can expect if the federal and local funds stay at the level that they are today for budget purposes, that would see about a 23,000-hour reduction in service. And how that will be distributed will be through the grant and aid program. As we receive those applications for grants in that biennium period, we'll have to look at those needs and make tough decisions about how those funds would be distributed to make that cut.
Okay, and we have a question from Representative Benson.
Hey, thank you, Mr. Chair. I was approached recently by an owner-operator of a transit system about the fact that there are routes that have very, very low ridership, and when he's approached the authority about discontinuance, he was told, we've got to run them, otherwise, lest we not get our money. And, you know, he says there's an efficient way to do this and there's some inefficiencies. And I'm just wondering, you know, before we, you know, decide who's going to get what, do we have some performance reports that are required to make sure that the established routes are indeed where we need to have runs. And you know, I'm not unaware of we need to have service, but in his mind at least, there are some that really don't justify the added expense. So if you could answer that,
Mr. Henkel.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Benson, there are standards that apply to the distribution of federal funds and to how those grants are issued. There is a transit report that is issued to the legislature as well as to the federal government. And so we can provide that information to you as well as to the committee in detail if you'd like to understand how those decisions are made and how that could affect some of those low ridership services out in greater Minnesota.
And Representative Benson.
Okay, so there is no software program or reporting program at such that goes red flag. This route is not showing the demonstrated number of riders so that we can determine whether or not it needs to continue to be part of our... There is.
Mr. Henkel. Mr. Chairman, Representative Benson, I'm looking at Mr. Schadauer, the Director of Transit, I think he's saying yes, that there is some programmatic ways that we can look at those issues.
Representative Benson.
Mr. Chair, I would love an invitation to wherever we need to go so that I could take a look at it myself.
We will do that, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And Representative Morrow has another question.
Sorry, Mr. Chair, but I just want to make sure that we're clear that there's both fixed route and there's dial ride service, and both are being covered in this presentation. Dial ride service wouldn't necessarily have the same riders per miles.
Mr. Chairman, I'll quickly continue to some of the summary statistics for spending so that the body understands how those funds are being used. You can see here in the spending summary that the lion's share of funding recommended under this activity is going to the local assistance, which again is the grant aid programs and the distribution of those funds to the local providers across the state of Minnesota. The remainder, capital outlay, et cetera, goes to those supporting activities for the distribution of those federal funds and the oversight that's necessary, as well as the oversight for those state funds and those grant and aid programs as the federal and state funds go together to provide those services in greater Minnesota, along with the compensation that's necessary for the staff within the Office of Transit to provide those support activities. Moving quickly to the freight, which is on page 28. Of your budget narratives. Again, you can see that this activity's goal is to enhance Minnesota's economic competitiveness by improving access to regional, national, and global markets through the safe and efficient movement of goods and also advancing highway safety within the state of Minnesota. As you look quickly through the services provided as summarized here, you can see that this office has a diversity of responsibilities for the infrastructure as well as for working with the commercial activities of trucking within the state of Minnesota. Those activities include administering the Minnesota Rail Service Improvement Program as well as the Port Development Assistance Program that Mr. Lambert just reported to you earlier. Also, the activity of assisting in the grade crossing safety activities and making improvements to those grade crossings, which are both on the local system as well as the trunk highway system that MnDOT is responsible for. The rail-related trunk highway project activities that we support to ensure that the rail freight industry is coordinated with our trunk highway systems where those two cross, as well as the inspection activities under rail safety to conduct inspections of rail track to ensure compliance with federal and state regulations. Page 29 goes on to some of the others, the freight and rail planning, developing plans, for example, the recently adopted state passenger and freight rail plan. Also, oversized overweight truck permits, a great deal of the complement and compensation that we have for this budget item goes to the issuance of permits for the allowance of truck use of the infrastructure that we're responsible for in the state of Minnesota to ensure that infrastructure is protected from oversized and overweight trucks, as well as the motor carrier activity for education, credentialing, and safety evaluation activities as summarized there. Page 31 of your narrative, gives you the breakdown of the appropriation recommended. You can see that in total, what's being recommended, combination of direct and statutory funds, is $33.58 million over the course of the biennium. The freight spending plan, as summarized in the slide here, gives you a quick outlay. You can see here again that the majority of funds are going to the capital outlay and real property. This is primarily the grade rail crossing program that's improving the grade rail grade in our state, as well as then the total compensation. You're noting that compared to other budget activities, the compensation is fairly large. This is associated with the permit activities within the office, which receive federal funding to ensure safety compliance and infrastructure permitting compliance for those trucks on this across the state, and that's the reasoning for the larger figures. Moving quickly to the last budget activity, which is passenger rail, starts on page 32 of your narrative. The MnDOT Passenger Rail Office is responsible for managing this budget item and is responsible for the planning and development of passenger rail service in the state of Minnesota. Its primary function currently is to act as an expert for high-speed rail in the state and in the Midwest, being associated with the Midwest activities, as well as delivery of the planning and programs associated with those corridors that are designated in the state passenger and freight rail plan. In particular, this office is responsible for administration of the general obligation bonds that were issued in 2009. If you look at page 33 of your budget narrative, there is a summary of the proposed uses of the 2009 general obligation bonds. I will note that I'll just give you some dates so that you understand the rollout as expected for the general obligation bonds. First and foremost, BNSF Northtown Yard, the $800,000. That table is what I'm looking at. Those funds have been applied to that work and were accomplished in 2009. Twin Cities to Chicago high-speed rail corridor is underway. $550,000 is expected to be applied to activities in 2011. The direct staff costs associated with NLX, the connection of Duluth to Minneapolis via high-speed rail, is expected to be needed in and is being needed in 2010 as well as into fiscal year 2011. Northern Lights Express additional work on the environmental and project delivery activities will continue for the $9 million plus in fiscal year 2011 through 2012. St. Paul Union Depot is underway. Those funds will be used starting in this fiscal year 2011. And the Minneapolis interchange is the same. The $3.6 million will be applied to the work on that Minneapolis interchange in fiscal year 2011. The only unknown at this point is the Rochester corridor at $2 million, as we're trying to determine when that study can be put underway. That will be used for determining the Greenfield alignment connecting Rochester to the Twin Cities. As you can see here, I've listed those services provided on this slide, as well as the appropriation recommendation of $4,027,000 over the biennium with the respective direct and statutory recommendations to use the state and federal funds that are available, as well as the general fund obligation that would go towards the direct staffing costs. And the spending plan summarized under other operating in a total of $4 million for the time frame proposed. To conclude my remarks on the multimodal systems, Mr. Chairman, here's a summary of the governor's recommendation for the general fund reduction that is associated with the transit activity. Again, as Mr. Arsenault stated earlier, we're proposing a reduction of $1.392 million per year to help address the state general fund deficit. This includes an 8.3% reduction in grants to Greater Minnesota and in the amount of 1.343 and a 5% reduction in general fund administrative functions in the amount of $49,000 respectively. And as I said earlier, with everything else being stable, we would expect approximately 23,000 fewer hours of bus service associated with that particular reduction. That concludes my remarks, an overview of the multimodal systems. I'd stand for any additional questions.
With 2 minutes to spare. Members, any questions for Mr. Henkel? All right, gentlemen, thank you very much. Mr. Arsenault, take care of that cold. And Mr. Jonas, I guess we'll get to his presentation next time.
Very good.
And with that, members, we are adjourned.